Hey everybody, welcome to this week's episode of Whiskey Neat, spirited conversations with interesting people. I'm your host, Christopher Hart. This introduction is going to be a little bit more freeform than usual, although it's usually pretty loose. We're doing this episode on a day that an episode actually is released. So for those of you who are watching this episode, this is actually from when Whistlepig was released with Dave Pickerell, who was absolutely fantastic. I literally feel like there's another hour and a half of content. I want to do a 3-hour podcast with a guy. I thought it was fascinating. And these guys actually had already listened to the episode before they came on the show today. So there's so much happening in Houston around spirits that it's such a fun and invigorating time to just kind of eat up what you can, absorb what you can. And we're joined today by Kimper Williams and Kyle Ray of Avanac Distillery. They both co-founded the company in 2016, and Kyle is the only employee of this company in Houston. I could arguably say it's the only distillery I know of in Houston with one employee. Just fantastic. What you're seeing in front of you is not actually whiskey. I've talked about this before. A lot of distilleries, because with whiskey you distill, you hope it's good. You have to wait 4 years or so or more to see if it's any good. And then if it's not good, you have to start over fresh. So a lot of distilleries, what they'll do is they will distill vodka or gin or brandy or other products and you know, that don't need to be aged, and sell them to help kind of sustain the business until their dream, their goal is achieved. And in this case, it's whiskey. So, but with that being said, their love and passion behind gin is phenomenal. And I liked it so much, and I'm not a gin person, but I liked it so much that I wanted to have them on the show today to talk about it, because we talk about Yellow Rose, we talk about Whitmire's, two of the most iconic in Houston. If you know whiskey in Houston, if you know distillers in Houston, you know, everyone knows Yellow Rose, and some people know Whitmire's. Those who know Whitmire's know everybody. Whitmire's is, for a long time, was a little bit more niche because they're on the northwest side of town, but Whitmire's has become a household name in Houston over the past couple of years, and they're big supporters of me, and I'm a huge supporter of theirs. So I love the idea of more distilleries in Houston, regardless of what they're making. If you're making a good product, it deserves to be talked about. So believe it or not, they make two different gins and a vodka that all actually have like real discernible, interesting flavors to them. And I thought, okay, you guys have to come on the show. We need to talk about it. So Avanac Distillery, for those of you, if you decide to go out and try to look for it and buy it, the hashtag is Drink Avanac. They've been in Houston since 2016, and they will be at the social next year. And I'm really honored just to have them on the show to kind of talk about their goal and everything they're doing in Houston. That being said, this episode, like every episode, is sponsored by our folks over at Brown-Forman. Today, specifically GlenDronach and Jack Daniel's. Huge Jack Daniel's fan. I've been talking about them for years. Jack Daniel's is iconic for a reason. This single barrel barrel proof is one of my favorite things that they produce. And GlenDronach 12. We've had Stuart Buchanan on the show. We've had GlenDronach on the show a couple times. 12-year-old single malt scotch, sherry bomb, in your face, robust whiskey for a very reasonable price. I'm huge fans. Without further ado, I think that pretty much covers everything. Make sure that you check out the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Facebook Live, or not Facebook Live, but Facebook. We put all the videos uploaded there and to YouTube. So please rate and review. Go to iTunes, please. Please, please, please. Go to iTunes, rate and review the show. Give me your feedback. Let me know what you'd like to see on the show. If there's a subject that we haven't covered yet that you'd want to cover, I'm open to discussing it. I think that pretty much covers all of our bases. Yeah, we're good. All right, sweet. Without further ado, Kimper Williams and Kyle Ray of Avanac Distillery and their gin. Cheers. Nineteen twenties, gets ranted about in HBS. Everyone's a huge fan. And there's always an apprehension with a new one. Like, is it going to be? It's like when every Quentin Tarantino movie after Pulp Fiction, you're like, it's not the same.
Yeah.
So there's always a fear of it not being as good. But I'm excited to try it.
I mean, it's one of my favorites. I think where they've done a really good job is somehow keeping the balance of flavor and heat just right. Some of the ones that are a little higher proof can be a little tougher to enjoy. So
sure.
I think this is like almost spot on.
Well, with that being said, Kyle, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
I'm excited Appreciate to have it. You guys on. Hey, Kemper.
Thanks for having us.
Kemper Williams, Kyle Ray. Those sound like very Texan names, which is kind of apropos of the distillery name, Avanac. What's the story behind the name?
So the story behind the name, it's actually a very Houstonian name. It's a small town on the north side, which was really where we kind of developed the idea and the concept. And we wanted something to kind of elevate the Houston craft distillery scene. And you kind of see that a little bit in our bottles. But we wanted to have like little tiny flashes of Houston in our brand.
To turn those towards the camera so they can see them. So you're absolutely right, because now you've said something to me that I'm going to put you on the spot and make sure it's set on camera. Actually, if you go the other way, you see how it's kind of angled towards Kemper? Have them angled towards Kyle so that, bring that one back and it might be able to see a little bit better. So the thing you said to me is, now this is a very Texas name. It's a very Texan-driven product, very organic, right? And for those listening or seeing this, they're not brown, and we'll get to that in a minute, but they don't have that stereotypical Texan look. Now, that being said, before we go down this road, if there is anything that we need to cut out, just let me know in between breaks and we'll cut it out. But, you told me something specifically, the reason why these look so elegant and kind of set apart and not so regionally focused like a lot of Texas products are. They have very, they kind of play off the stereotype of Texans. I mean, I don't think I have a Texas accent, but, that stereotype of hee-haw, and we all have cows sure. and horses. And
yeah, we all wear boots with spurs and, ride horses to work.
Sure, sure.
But, Houston is really a super diverse
city. Super diverse. Very diverse.
People here come from all over the place and travel all over the place. And we kind of wanted our flagship line of gins to be something that would catch their eye when they're traveling outside of Texas, when they're in New York or Tokyo, and you see 59 gin and I-10 gin, that's home.
Right? Sure.
So that's home to them.
So they don't have the cowboy hat or the
right.
the spurs or the, I do see it's grained to glass and it does have Texas on the back, but you didn't want to be regionally stereotyped.
No, because I don't think that is Texas anymore. There's a lot of different languages and cultures that are mixed here. And so we kind of wanted to just have something that was elevating that spirit game here in town. So, it was really important to us to have a nice, sophisticated, classier package to go with, gin that's becoming a really hot spirit in cocktail bars, lots of new bars opening up. And so people are being introduced to it, and we wanted something that, was nice to have on the shelf at back bar at new bars, but also on their shelf at home.
Sure. A reasonably priced product. Now, the show is called Whiskey and Eat. I'm sure there are some people saying, why are we doing a show that's not whiskey related? Well, the very first show was rum and cognac. I have an affinity for all spirits, and I met Kyle, just a little backstory for those who aren't in HBS or Houston Bourbon Society. I met Kyle through the group, and if anything happens in Houston, like a new distillery opening, people tend to catch wind about it. And you kind of popped up on the radar, and our good friend Wade Woodard kind of introduced us. And we sat down at his house, and I got to try your gins. Now, I've said this before. I've never been a big gin guy, but that was more of my ignorance. I just didn't know a lot about gin, and I didn't enjoy it straight the way that I do whiskey and scotch. But I dove head first into peat and that vegetal, earthy note, and something I really enjoy, and got to spend some time at Rosewater in Clear Lake. A lot of us have heard me talk about Pasha, and he's got this incredible gin selection, as does Morgan over at 8 Row Flint. And I got to dive into this vegetal distillation, these, you know, flowers and grassy notes that you don't really, you don't get in bourbon, but you get them heavy in the peated scotches. And I found an interest in it. It's an incredibly complex spirit. And we've got one of, that I know of, two distilleries here in Houston that are making a grain to glass gin.
So as far as I know, we're the only ones that make the base spirit as well.
In Houston.
In Houston.
Because I know Iron Root makes a, I've talked about them. They put their base spirit, which was a vodka base, if I'm not mistaken. I know Robert listens. But they aged them in barrels first and ended up, that's how Starka came about, which is this phenomenally fantastic non-whiskey that they make. And, you know, and we've also talked about the fact of what it's like opening a distillery. When you open a distillery, if you ever want to get to the bourbon phase of distillation, you can start distilling and laying bourbon down and then see what happens in 5 years, and it may or may not have worked, and you have to start over from scratch. Or you can build a foundation off sourcing product, which we're all familiar with. There's a lot of brands out there who source product and, you know, do something to it, or a lot of times they just package it, the exact same liquid, do nothing to it, and make a quick buck to kind of sustain the business and then grow their bourbon line, which is very respectable. And you guys do right now, you're not sourcing anything right now. You've got all grain to glass distillation, vodka and gin, and you are working on some brown spirits at some point. Can't talk too much about those, but I'm wholly impressed, and I'm very, I had to have you guys on, which was the whole reason for this whole today's everything, is I thought more people need to hear about Avanac, and we're going to get to the gins in a minute, but I'm going to finish this bourbon.
Well, thanks for the, I mean, kind words. You know, we wanted to do something a little bit different, and put as much art and, you know, love of the craft portion of this into our product. And that was why when we launched the two gins, they had to be grain to glass. It was something that we wanted to impact every step of the production. So, you know, through grain selection, the mash bill, through fermentation, initial distillation, and then, you know, final distillation with the botanicals.
Sure.
And even our proofing process, it's kind of taken from the cognac method of slow proofing. And so we feel like that helps create a more flavorful and aromatic spirit. So these actually take us several weeks, sometimes up to 6 to 8 weeks
to make
a batch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I know, and speaking of proof, you guys don't cookie cut anything. I mean, if you're talking 48% for your gins.
For I-10, 48%, and then it was 45% for 59.
That little, and I've said this before, there are three things that you can look at a package of a product and automatically know if there was some craft or some care put behind it. Proof is one. If they're, you know, 80, anytime a distiller does anything more than 80 proof, they're losing profits, right? They're sacrificing for what they could be making for the sake of having a quality spirit. So when you see something that's 90 proof, throw in the fact that it's non-chill filtered, or no color adding. So all those three things are like, okay, this is something that was, there's a long history and a passion there that goes beyond just making a quick buck. And obviously there's no color added, you know, just seeing the 48% or the 90 proof, it's just awesome. So, you know, my hat's off to you. Kemper, Mr. Quiet.
Sure.
Let's talk about who Kemper is. Co-founders.
Yeah.
Now, you do have a little bit of that Texas twang in the voice.
I'm the one that's got it for sure. Yeah. The family's been here for a while. So, you know, the whole inspiration and the creative aspect is all Kyle. It's really been Kyle. It's been his baby. I mean, from grain to glass, his baby. And so, you know, my input has been like, I'll be up at 1 a.m. giving that baby a bottle, you know, a couple nights a week. And then I, of course, paid for some of the formula. But, you know, my support has been more to just help make some of these strategic decisions and figure out
what's the best
where we're going to go. What's the best move?
How long have you guys been open?
So the company was started in 2016.
Okay.
And then we got our permits to distill in 2017, summer of 2017. So we started up production right away, laid down a few barrels of stuff, and then started our vodka and gin production.
So you laid down first some brown
a water. Very, very small amount.
Okay. What size barrels are we talking about here?
So we're currently using 3 barrels, 10s, 15s, and 30s. And we're using 2 cooperages.
Okay. What's the long-term goal there?
The long-term is within 2 years of every spirit to be on all 53s.
Wow. Okay.
That's the owner's batch. That's like, hey, let's start this and do it and have some fun.
Sure. Sure.
And get going with it early.
Well, there's a mentality in Texas historically to go small. Most distilleries start off with the, you know, even there's one locally that was using 5 liter at one point. And you know who I'm talking about. And the mentality for those who don't know is that you speed up, in parentheses, you speed up aging with a higher surface ratio for liquid exposing to wood. So a smaller barrel means more liquid surface is touching wood, more contact than what's in the barrel. So the problem is with Texas heat, I've always, and I'm going to say the word postulate because it makes me feel smart. I've always postulated that that the mentality may be small barrels, which are more expensive and is a lot more time consuming as far as the amount of effort that goes into, you know, each bottle. But I think the other way should be explored. If you listen to the episode I did with our friends over at Ranger Creek, we discussed in that episode that Robert Licorice over at Iron Root, they've got one massive barrel that they're aging in just to see what happens. Like this massive, you know, very tiny surface contact ratio to the liquid.
Yeah.
Because if the heat's going to speed up aging, and you don't want it to be too harsh to pull too much of that bitter tannins out of the wood,
right,
then maybe reduce the amount of contact it has with the wood.
Yeah, and there's only so much of that stave that was toasted and charred. So if you go beyond that, you're touching, you know, virgin oak that hasn't been toasted or charred. And so you're going to get more of those harsh chemicals into it. So, yeah, you change the color, but you really didn't improve the liquid.
Sure.
And the whole goal is, you know, to let chemical reactions occur and to improve it.
The experimentation is really the fun part.
Yeah.
But it's got to be controlled to some extent.
Yeah.
I mean, we'd love to go out and experiment with all different kinds of things. I think we intend to get there at some point too.
I think a good person to, you know, start that topic of conversation is somebody like Dave Pickerell. I love listening to him talk about barrels. But it's kind of interesting in the industry. Most people would agree that the barrel's influencing more than 50% of, you know, of whiskey. But in wine, a barrel's only affecting it, some people say 10, 20%. And yet they dive into the nuances of barrels, toasting profiles, much more in depth than
whiskey,
the whiskey world, which I find is really strange.
Yeah.
So, you know, we actually have all of our spirits tailored to different barrels. If we are coming out with our initial bourbon, which is, you know, a less than 5 year old bourbon, it's slightly different liquid, but it's in a different barrel toasted and charred profile than our later planned products, which are going to sit there for, you know, probably 4 to 6 to 7 years, hopefully, in this Texas heat. And so the wine side of things pays a lot of attention to something that's not as important as it is for the whiskey world. And here, you know, all the distilleries are kind of buying a very generic barrel from, you know,
a lot of them are
specific cooperage.
Yeah.
And not putting a lot of effort into their product. So we're kind of taking taking our notes from, you know, the Japanese style of making whiskey, which has a the end goal, and then we're adjusting everything based on that target part product.
Sure. I mean, it's definitely a fascinating subject for us to – I know a lot of people who – in the whiskey world, there are a lot of people who will buy, like you said, generic. They're not as particular. Mm-hmm. I also know that there are some distilleries who are extremely particular. There's this weird thing. It's kind of like the discussion we had about certain distributors can do a lot for you at the beginning, but they kind of limit you to a certain extent. You know, I've said that about a distributor that we're recently familiar with. And the Jack is a similar situation because they get in early for drinkers, right? They're like when you're 19, 20, I'm sorry, when you're 21, 22, your first experience is going to be the more budget friendly whiskeys. And I think that it's great for the brand because obviously they're selling a lot of product, but it also kind of pigeonholes or limits some brands.
Yeah.
I've been preaching the good word of Jack Daniel's single barrel and now Jack Daniel's barrel proof for a couple of years now because that is phenomenal whiskey. It's phenomenal bourbon, but that's a different argument to have on the show. And it is bourbon for those listening.
Yeah. I think that that's probably the primary difference between the craft distillery boom that's happening and the craft brewery boom that occurred.
Ooh, you're saying past tense?
Yeah.
I'd say it's still happening.
Maybe it depends on where.
Okay, sure.
But in general, you know, it started in the 90s. I mean, big old distilleries like Jack Daniel's and, you know, lots of distilleries in Scotland make really high quality products.
Sure.
And that's what, you know, everybody has to go up against is a really high quality product at pretty reasonable prices. And, you know, the craft brewery scene, the big boys were not really making a quality product. And so the door was a lot more open than it is for us. And so, you know, that's
what do you mean?
Well, the quality of beer in the US in the 90s was pretty low. You just had the big, really light
it was like,
American
yeah,
lagers.
It was like Ford cars in the 90s. Yeah.
I won't go there.
Ford Mustang was a
but there really wasn't a lot of options. They were all, you know, in a certain niche of very light, pale style lagers, right?
Sure.
And, you know, now you have people coming up with all kinds of things, you know, and they're doing barrel aged porters and, you know, these double IPAs and sours. And really the variety has been really impressive and, you know, people are finding out that they like beer because they have these different options.
Sure.
But it's, you know, it's just really hard to start making your own whiskey when you don't know what you're going to get for a couple of years. And you've got, you know, some of these other companies that have been doing it for 100, 200 years.
They fine-tuned it already a long time ago. Exactly. Yeah, at a much cheaper rate than it is nowadays to experiment. Mm-hmm. Jack is they've got it down to a science the way that Makers does. Makers, their standard product is 6 years, you know, they don't put that on there, but that's about when they pull it.
Right.
And that turnover rate's fantastic, right? They're not waiting 12 years like Elijah Craig does for their barrel proof product. So it's a weird time because Texas is doing so many great things. And every time a new distillery pops up in Houston, people want to say, careful with saturation. We got so far to go with that. Like if in my mind, I'm thinking if whether a distillery opens in Houston or opens in a different state, it's the same saturation, meaning, when people say, oh, there's another one opening up in Houston. Well, if it had opened up in Oklahoma and you heard about it, you'd buy it anyways. If it was, you know, on the bourbon forums, if someone says something's good, there's a couple distilleries right now that we're trying to get to Texas, Blount Brothers and New Riff, who plays music into their barrels just like Copper and Kings does. They're fairly new, fairly young. But fantastic, and we all want it. So we're willing to buy it to have it shipped to us, but people tend to panic when Houston opens up yet like a brewery. Every time a brewery opens up in Houston, people are like, oh, God, not another one. It's such a great time to be in spirits, period, whether it's beer or whiskey or gin. I think there's still plenty of room to grow. We had the conversation earlier. You guys are kind of getting in when there's still – I mean, like I said, there's only two gins made here, two that I know of.
That's right.
Yeah. You know, not Sassafras.
Yeah, it's Whitmire Sassafras.
Sassafras, yeah, Whitmire Sassafras gin. And your gin are the only two gin distilleries in Houston that I know of. We've got a couple vodkas, sure. But again, we vodka serves a purpose. It's easy to make, quick turnover rate, easy buck, helps you sustain growth. It's you investing in yourself, whereas a lot of distilleries – look for shortcuts. So
yeah,
I applaud you for sure because it can't be easy. I mean,
you bet. So we're looking to make a premium, interesting product that was unique, that we were proud of, that no one else was kind of doing around us, and we came out with two different ones. But right now you've got the 59.
Yeah, the pink one, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's got a lot of fruit citrus notes to it.
Yes, it
hence the what looks like to be grapefruit on the
mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you guys are again bumping proof, grain to glass, all organic grains made here in Houston. Boom, hitting all the check marks, right? Can you hear that? Boom, 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 boom.
We all sat down as an ownership team to pick the proof on these things. We let the spirit talk to us.
Oh, so you gauged it based off what it deserved, not just the standard. That's awesome. I mean, it's the same thing. I think we talked about that recently in a past episode. We did it with Amroot, and I think we did it with Glenmorangie, just talking about how they're proofed to what the spirit shines best at.
Yes.
And I know we have a few listeners who are not huge gin fans. I'll tell you this much. If you're Scotch fans, if you're smoky peated Scotch fans, or if you are a chartreuse fan or anything that has anything to do with vegetal notes, give this a shot. And from what I understand, this is a pretty reasonably priced product, right? You can find it in a few shops around Houston. You guys only are in Houston right now.
Yes.
Yep. And what are we looking at? Reasonable shelf range.
$26-$27 for the gins, and it's going to be $22 for the vodka.
I have lauded's the right word. Applauded. I've screamed the praises of Copper and King's barrel aged gin, and it's at $60. So they do a barrel aged gin that helped change my mind about whether or not I was into gin, and for $25-$28, it's worth trying. It's actually really good.
Yeah.
I don't mean to undersell it.
I hadn't thrown it down, you know, in between the whiskeys, but it definitely magnifies the flavor.
What are we talking long-term goals here? What's the plan with the distillery? Another Houston grain-to-glass distillery. Are we talking potential sourced whiskeys, bourbons? Are we talking anything other brandies? I know that Whitmire's has started playing around with single malts and potentially brandies. Morgan Weber,
right,
is doing his own brandies. Mm-hmm. Or what's down the pipeline?
Yeah, so I think the pipeline is kind of like our palate. I mean, we don't only drink gin.
Sure,
we love bourbon, single malt, rye. cognac, you know, other brandies. So the immediate pipeline is a grain to glass bourbon. It's a weeded bourbon with a tailored grain bill.
Is that what I tasted the other day?
No.
Okay.
No. You'll need to stop by and taste that.
And for those listening, if you are in the Houston area, you can find them 59 North, right at Beltway 8, right on the corner of 59 and Beltway 8, right on the north east side of town. Avanac Distillery, you can't miss them. It's right there at Beltway 8 and 59.
Yep. Thanks.
You want to give the address?
Yeah, it's 5750 North Sam Houston Parkway East, and we're suite 509.
Boom. Sorry, go ahead. What were you saying?
So, you know, we drink a little bit of everything, and bourbon is going to be coming out.
It's got to be good, though.
Pretty soon.
It's got to be good, guys. Listen, Texas is fighting an uphill battle.
Yep.
There's so many Texas distilleries, so many good people I know that are trying so hard to kind of figure out the Rubik's Cube of Texas bourbon. The math isn't adding up. It's not quite there. And everyone is doing their dead level best, quitting their careers and sacrificing their marriages, doing everything they can to produce a quality bourbon. Whitmire's does a fantastic job, but they're still not pumping out as much, and it's kind of hard to find. But currently, if you want their own grain of glass, you have to go to the distillery.
Mm-hmm.
But the rest of Texas, people like Dan Garrison, the Garrison brothers, Iron Root, Ranger Creek, everyone's
Balcones
trying to figure out.
It's a balance. If you nerd out, you will probably go out of business.
So I think a lot of people are focused too much on a short term win. And so they're using these, you know, itty bitty barrels, which is usually going to negatively impact the whiskey.
Sure.
They have a product in 3 months or 6 months, or a company in Ohio, you know, a day or two, right? Calling it bourbon. And that just doesn't result in a quality product. If our gins are taking, you know, 2 months to make, we're more concerned with the end result. And, you know, we're going to have a bourbon that we are proud to put out at a reasonable price, that we're not gouging people. And then we'll use those barrels for single malt, and there will be a barrel aged gin down the road as probably like a third use as well. So we kind of use all of these things in our plan, to help with the product pricing. Sure. You know, we're not pricing it at today to gouge people and, to make all of our money right now, which sure. I think people are trying to do with these shortcuts.
A lot of people are trying to catch up on money owed. I think, yeah. I think money that they put in and it didn't pay off as quick as they had hoped. And now they're desperate in recouping the amount that I won't say who, but there was a Texas distiller that did a tasting here in Houston a couple years back. And all they could talk about at this tasting in front of 40 people was how much money that they're currently negative. And I thought, why would you tell the consumer any of this? It's gross. Like, it's icky. Like, mm-hmm. It's a turnoff. No one wants to kind of, it's desperate.
You don't have to say it because everybody understands that there's a balance. So just.
I'm freaking out on the inside. Freak out on the inside. Get drunk and vent to your family.
That's right.
but keep the consumer out of what seems to be a desperation, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, there's a, like I said, there's
but it's
a
real.
It is real. Yeah.
You know, but we made the commitment early on that we wanted to price reasonably, just, you know, some goals we had in mind, but never to sacrifice on the quality of what we put out there.
So you guys,
want to enjoy drinking it, you know.
You guys, I there's not very often the way I look at this, and this may irritate some, is there are a few whiskeys that I think have pristine unaged distillate. I'm not a huge 1792 fan overall, but their White Dog, I think, is incredible. Like, I would buy bottles of their White Dog. It's got this yeasty dinner biscuit. Kind of reminds me, if for those of you who remember Ryan's, you remember Ryan's Buffet back in the day, like 95. How long have you been in Houston?
It's like
years. Golden Corral, but for more trashy. So and it's got like this Cracker Barrel dinner biscuit note to it, mm-hmm. just the distillate. You know, I don't know at what level they distill that, but you know, if you go the higher distillation, it was
pretty high. Is my guess.
I would think it's pretty low because once you get up to vodka, it becomes bland. You get rid of all.
But like you've tasted White Dog in Scotland.
Yeah, and it's awful. Lagavulin White Dog's
that's
awful.
That's because they know they've got 12, 15, 18
to well round
30 years for it to oxidize and to age. So you put more and more of your heads and tails into that.
A much wider cut.
Because the heads and tails actually contain huge, huge amounts of flavor. But you can't drink it when it's young.
Sure.
And that's what you taste a lot in Texas bourbons.
Oh, really? Is a broad cut?
Yep. They take too broad of a cut and then they put it in too small of a barrel. And the combination doesn't work.
It's like if you were to liquid... You ever chew on fresh splintered wood?
I try not to.
Yeah. Well, it's like that real, I've said the word benzene. It's got kind of a gasoline corn oil note to it.
It's headsy.
It's headsy. Yeah, it's not good. But with gin, this reminds me of unaged distillate. Like it's a different mentality approach because when you first get into drinking spirits straight, I know many people who won't. I think we had this discussion earlier where they would come in and be like, oh, this is delicious. And they just shoot it.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, it's smooth. And nothing about this exchange makes sense to you.
Was that Wade that said it was smooth?
Yeah, exactly.
Probably Wade.
No, but you're not smooth doesn't denote anything. What it really refers to is the amount of burn when you shoot it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you just simply spend time with the spirit, that it's you can appreciate it for itself. And that's what this reminds me of, is it reminds me of like an unaged peated whiskey, but with more citrus and floral notes. Mm-hmm. Like it's got a very earthy glory to it.
When we were first playing with the vodka, Kyle and I loved it initially. And we had some other people with maybe more experience in vodka than us say, no, it wasn't there yet. And I think that's because it was basically an awesome White Dog.
Yeah. Maybe that's what it is because they're wanting it to be as neutral as possible, yes. But you're picking up
and
on notes.
Whiskey right. drinkers, and we right. really liked it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that might – so 190, I believe, is the cutoff for vodka. Yep. It's got to be at least 190, and that's where you hit the neutral zone.
Mm-hmm.
What were you guys at that – when you said you liked it, what was it being tested? Was it at 190 or mm-hmm. lower?
It's still right at 190.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
But you still were picking up on discernible notes
mm-hmm.
of yeah, supposed to be neutral grain spirits.
So we use what would qualify as a bourbon mash bill.
You say that so Ron Swanson, not Ron Swanson, Ron Burgundy. Just
yeah.
A bourbon mash bill.
It's a bourbon mash bill for our vodka. So it's corn and wheat and just a little bit of barley. We change the ratio and the barley for our bourbon. But we want notes of the corn. We want notes of the wheat. We want you to know what this came from. We don't want to put out a bottle of rubbing alcohol.
Sure.
Some people want a bottle of rubbing alcohol. And,
well,
and
some
there's
people
lots
are,
of stuff out there for that.
Sure. Some people are looking for a mixer for their Bloody Mary. They're not looking mm-hmm. to appreciate a spirit for what it is. And that's where I think we've seen – I think I've beaten this phrase to death, but a rising tide raises all ships. Bourbon has gone through this boom, but now we're starting to see rum explode. We're starting to see tequila explode, mezcals.
Rye.
Well, yeah. I kind of group whiskey into one big category when it comes to the resurgence. Because a lot of it's
separate.
It is separate, but a lot of it's not bourbon anyways, like with barrel finishes and artificial flavors, it's not technically bourbon, but people still think it's bourbon. And if you just group the whiskey category into one, the overall categories exploded, right? I mean, even last week we had on, which aired, I know this is a weird timeline for folks who are hearing this. You're hearing this a week from when it was recorded. The day that this was recorded was last week's episode when you guys heard it. So Dave Pickerel is coming out today. But we started that episode off with Old Baldy, which I butchered what that mix was. I came into that conversation completely uneducated on it. But I found out that there's a large portion of rye whiskey involved in the mix. And then even something, even just spirit whiskey. Not spirit whiskey. I'll tell you what it is.
Light whiskey?
Light whiskey. That's what it was. Light whiskey.
Yeah.
And
so distilled above 160.
Correct. Yeah. So it's a mix of all these things that are non-bourbon related. And these bottles are going for, listed up on charity on the sites, for north of $3,000 for a bottle. And that wouldn't be there if it wasn't for bourbon doing, causing that to happen. So I kind of grouped the category together. Rye is definitely seeing a resurgence. Whistlepig came in right at the best time. And there's not many other rye-only brands that are doing like what Whistlepig's doing. Their entire portfolio is around it.
Right.
Right? So Heaven Hill's doing a little bit of brandy now. They've got some ryes. They've got some bourbons. Whistlepig is all rye. And they've got like, you know, 10 different expressions. Are they coming
out with the bourbon?
In the episode, he mentioned that they've got some bourbon laying down. Yeah. I want to say it's 4 years old. It's pretty young. It's pretty young.
It was started in 09.
Yeah, I don't know if he laid it down immediately, though. I don't know if – I think it was – I mean, you know what it's like. You don't lay everything down immediately.
No.
Are you guys working on a rum yet? Not quite.
Oh, no, we're not working on a rum.
No, we're not there.
No. It's
That seemed loaded. That seemed like a wink, wink, we're not working on a rum.
We're working on selling this gin.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, gin is one of our passions.
It's a great time. I mean, Bacardi does this huge thing. Pasha just got back from, I want to say Greece, England. They just did this huge gin thing with their gin, which Hendrix is William Grant. Bacardi is... not Beefeater. What's Bacardi? They have a gin. They own... What's like the Bombay Sapphire? Bombay. Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, it's I think gin... The whole point of this entire rambling was that whiskey's coming up and now you're seeing all these not secondary spirits or tertiary, but more like these niche categories growing to a much broader audience, which is such a phenomenal time to be in the industry at all.
Well, I think gin is tied partially to, you know, the cocktail scene. Cocktail bars, true cocktail bars, are really a big thing right now. And everywhere you go, there's new bars popping up all over Houston, all over
Austin. Good bars, Austin, not just dive bars.
Great bars.
Great bars.
Yeah, and... Some of
Rosewater,
them.
Preamble, Whiskey Cake. A lot of these bars are out of nowhere. I mean, Night Heron, everything that Morgan and their team's doing in Houston. Even Reserve 101 opened up another bar.
Yeah.
I mean, public services.
Cottonmouth.
Mm-hmm. There's this tremendous explosion, and it's not specifically whiskey related. It's cocktails. And gin has this massive following that I think – So we talked briefly before about how part of y'all's job is doing a lot of tastings, a lot of brand education. Mm-hmm. The focus historically has always been on teaching bartenders how to sell your product, right? And now we're seeing an era of the average consumer being exposed to these things. And then – so you're doing it – You're almost not, you're almost, it's not as important as it used to be to educate the bartender because the bartender, they know now. It's now the focus is more consumer driven at the bars. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's a challenge because, you know, the bartenders are being inundated by new brands constantly. And so if they
saturation's a problem.
Yeah, if they don't know about this local spirit, then they're not. helping, they're not creating cocktails with you. So what we're trying to do here locally is really work with a lot of the bars, social media, videos, helping us with recipes and, you know, doing events together to work with them and have them come to the distillery, do tours. If they haven't been on a distillery tour, you know, we invite them out, show them around, you know, do bottling events, things like that, so that they can improve, you know, their craft as well. Even if they're not using our gin, they're understanding how other spirits are made, you know, how whiskey's aged and, you know, things like that. So it's all tied together. And so
I just used Glendronic 12 to sanitize my glass for the next gin.
You did do that.
I just did that.
We all saw it. It's on video.
Well, it's all part of what you were saying, Kyle. It's all part of us kind of keeping, trying to keep our finger on the pulse of,
bottle.
Of what everybody's enjoying these days and where the business is going.
Mm-hmm.
USDA Organic I-10 Gin. And these bottles are nice. What's the story behind the bottles? I mean, besides the not wanting to go stereotypical Texan, where are you getting these done at?
So they're done in France. We did the designs locally with a small marketing firm here in town, as well as our team. And the point of the gin is to give you a little bit of a
idea,
an idea of what's in there. So you've got citrus and citrus flowers on 59 gin, and then you have the coriander leaf. And the flower from the cinnamon tree. So we use an Indonesian cinnamon, and that's an artist rendering of the flowers.
Sure. So for those who don't know, who are out of state, we have a couple highways here located in Houston. Oh, here, let me give you some of this. What's in that? The first one?
59?
Yeah. I-10, obviously, most people in the U.S. are familiar with I-10 because it runs coast to coast, right through the middle of all of us.
Mm-hmm.
And 59, obviously, being another one that goes straight through I-10, through Houston. And you've got to actually get onto 59 to get to you guys. So, or at least right there at the crossway there. What's the vodka called?
It's Avanac vodka.
It smells so good.
You know, we've got a couple of other names trademarked that we're kind of storing for mostly for gin. And so we wanted to have something that was simple, kind of easy to remember with the vodka rather than add an extra name.
All right. I'm going to give you a tip, and it's my free marketing advice. Add a couple of drops of black dye and call it Venom Vodka. I think it'll go over well with Marvel. This smells incredible. Even though this is more grassy, more plant-driven, I'm getting up on some sweetness.
And a lot of the base comes through, which is, you know, what I kind of find interesting from the distillation side is you'll get the maltiness. You'll get the grains coming through, and it really changes the spirit, especially on the finish. It's probably the biggest notice to it. It doesn't finish like a sourced gin.
Sure. So for those who aren't familiar with the distillation process, walk us through how you make gin.
Okay. So we really make gin as the one of the final steps.
It's my favorite, I think.
So we start with corn. And wheat and barley, and
very similar. Okay.
We start with whole grains. We work with a small farmer, for our corn and wheat, and we mill them in house. We then cook the corn and wheat. We lower our temperature, add barley, which is for the enzymes. Then we lower the temperature again, add our yeast, and we ferment for typically 7 to 9 days, which is quite a long
fermentation time.
Most vodkas are going to be half of that or even shorter with a really, really aggressive yeast that also produces a lot of off flavors. So we're basically doing a very gentle fermentation. And then we'll do a typical stripping run. So we'll go from our beer to 25, 30% ABV. We will then run that again in our vodka still and bring it up to about 190 proof. And then we will proof that down and add some of the botanicals, and we'll steep those. So we basically make a gin tea. It will start turning color. The juniper smells really fantastic in the distillery when we're making gin. And then after that has steeped, we'll add the rest of our botanicals, especially the florals. You have to add them very last minute. And then we do another distillation run. Those will come off of the still typically around 70 to 75% ABV. So it's still very strong. We'll then slowly proof those down to our bottling strength of 45 or 48% over the coming weeks.
Sure.
So yeah, it ends up taking us really almost 2 weeks to make the gin, and then another several weeks to proof it down.
So you mentioned earlier that the way that you proof it down is similar to the Pierre Ferrand process, where are you slowly adding water mm-hmm. to it? Is it RO or are you using?
Yeah. So we use a purified RO water.
Reverse osmosis for mm-hmm. those who don't know, which is very common in distillation to yield a really pure product, a pure water. So to speak.
Yeah, and we have a couple of large carbon filters on it as well. And, you know,
the finest San Jacinto River drainage basin water.
This is not just Pierre Ferrand, but, you know, the majority of cognac and brandy producers use this method so that they don't get a pectin haze. So when you go from a high ABV to something that's primarily water, so less than 50% ABV, you can get this pectin haze, very specific to brandies, that just doesn't look good. And the only reason is it just doesn't look good. So they do it very slowly. We've kind of found that we have such a flavorful and aromatic spirit that if we proof it down really quick, we lose a little bit of that. Just that transition from the high ABV to a lower ABV. And so this is what's working for us. We basically run it through a single filter, just a micron filter as we're bottling. And you can throw these in the freezer and they won't haze up. Looks good in cocktails.
The bump and proof definitely helps. I mean, normally yeah. You lose that haze once you go up. Which I guess would work better in your favor, being that they're clear bottles and clear liquid. Mm-hmm. So I tend to the grain one, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
Isn't it cool once you list those botanicals to kind of find them in
You
there?
Can really pick it apart. And that's kind of what I dig about it, is it's barrel-aged spirits are always welcome on the show. But to have – and that's mostly because most – this might be controversial. Many people might disagree with me. But most non-barrel-aged spirits are not as – layered or complicated, except for gin, right? So vodka, you know, there's to me, even White Dog is usually not a super complicated spirit. Now that might be different for eau de vie or you know, some unaged brandies, but to me, I think gin carries the most complexity for something that has zero contact with a barrel. But speaking of barrel being size, your still size is actually pretty remarkable. I mean, you guys are, I would say, you guys might hold the Edredauer title. Are you familiar with Edredauer's title? Edredauer's title for a long time was smallest distillery in Scotland. You guys might be the smallest distillery in the state with a total of
one
employee. One employee.
It's the and smallest you guys, you can be.
One employee, and you guys have the largest stills in Houston, right? So you.
I can't confirm, but I believe Gulf Coast has a bigger capacity still.
Gulf Coast, there's a lot of questions that need to be answered there. But that being said, the two most remarkable Houston distilleries. Yellow Rose, huge fan of Houston's. He's actually a big listener on the show. I really want to get Houston on the show. And Travis Whitmire, again, big supporters of me since day one, and I've supported them since before their local grassroots boom. You actually have capacity that's combined theirs. Am I right?
Yeah.
So their capacity together, even with Whitmire's brand new two stills, mm-hmm. you are both of theirs combined size-wise. And yeah, one employee. Yeah. That's a lot of work. Are you married?
I am.
You got a family?
I do.
Do you see them?
I have two older kids. You'd be surprised.
Oh, God.
Teens. So
I'm really in love with this I-10.
Yeah, that's my favorite.
It's got a cologne note to it, like an aromatic, like I want to spray it on
me. It's really aromatic. It's really flavorful.
The bottle comes through. I mean, you can get the cinnamin and the cilantro out of that.
And what's the proof on that one? That's a 90 proof?
96.
That's the bigger one.
Yep.
Yeah, so I know that's a taster bottle because there's no proof written on the bottle. There's no proof written on it.
It comes off after, 50 sure. times coming out of the case and whatnot. But
that one's got it on there.
I really can't wait to taste my wife on them, and specifically Pasha from Rosewater.
Yeah.
I have such reverence for him and his place that I really, in all sincerity, and this is not a sponsored episode, Avanac didn't pay me a dime, I want to... It's almost like when you bring your grades home to show your parents. I feel like if I bring this to Pasha and he likes it, it's almost like it's my product. Like I get to impress Pasha with something new. So I'm eager to get that down there. And my shop down there, the one that lives works a mile from my house, First Sip Liquor in La Porte, they ordered half a case of each, cool. and I'm picking them up on the way home today. So I'm excited.
Thank you.
Big great. Fan.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Certain bars gravitate to one gin versus the other. And it's the style of cocktails that they make.
What are some bars in Houston that carry you? What was the first one?
The very first one would be Starfish.
Okay.
Starfish Seafood, I-10 in Yale. Great, great gin selection. Good food, super really
great,
affordable happy hour.
Sure,
oysters and get some gin cocktails. Bar manager David Manis, really nice and creative with our gins. So he actually reached out right before we launched. They came up before we were even available and toured the facility and got some samples, bought a couple bottles, and so. I think literally the day that we were out in the restaurant, they already had cocktails for both of our spirits. So that was really, really great. We really appreciate that. South Bank was another one that picked us up.
Didn't Anvil right away. Pick you up as well?
Anvil.
So for whiskey lovers.
Gin.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I know that you guys just tasted Brian Wayne over at Poison Girl, which is one of mm-hmm. the most iconic whiskey bars here.
Yeah.
Brian is another revered personality, just very kind of quiet and loved from afar. He basically is the face of this phenomenal whiskey bar, this dive bar in Houston that's been a dive bar for decades, but it's also one of the best places to get bourbon. So, and I am going to do everything I can to really blow Pasha away. I would really like to see it in the Clear Lake side of town. I think that it fits his shtick, but he's got this beautiful vegetal floral wall that's very grassy and would fit the bottle so perfectly. Like the aesthetic is the same. Okay. So I'll get back to you on that.
Yeah.
Yeah. No promises.
Johnny's Gold Brick makes a fantastic Ramos Gin Fizz with 59. It's really a beautiful drink. A lot of effort goes into that.
Sure.
You can check out some of the videos we have on social media. Heights Beer Garden over there at Worcestershire's, they've got us. So yeah, we're at quite a few big cocktail bars in town. So pretty excited about that.
Sweet. So what's next on the horizon for your goal right now is more or less because you like I said you already the biggest stills, second biggest stills potentially. Have you been to Gulf Coast? Yet
I have not.
Are you allowed in the door? How does that work? Do they let?
I think if you told them you were going to wanted to bottle or maybe source something, but
sure, because that's what I thought they were. Is I thought they were simply a bottling facility for source product.
Yeah, I mean they're pretty, I think, under the radar. You know, they
very under the radar
making a bourbon. Supposedly
producing a bourbon.
It's hard to know. I mean, our door is open. You can come see how we make everything.
What are tours? Do they cost anything?
You know, I mean, not retail, yes, but, you know, if you buy a bottle, then no, that comes off.
Sure. Well, sweet. When are you guys open?
So right now we have private tours, and then in November, we're going to, be open on, Saturdays. So probably 10 to 3.
So you guys opened in 2016. This is your second full year. When's your anniversary?
It is technically in June. I kind of based it off of the permit.
Sure. You know, did you listen to the Dave Pickerel thing? He kind of based it off when he shook his hand, like, all right, yeah, we're going to do this, and shook some hands and sourced some barrels. And I get it. I mean, obviously, when I consider the beginning of the social was when I had the idea and started getting confirmation from brands that they were going to participate. So October, you know, 2015 or something. But you know, that took very little conception. I mean, you guys, how long did it take you guys from conception to opening?
So conception actually started probably 5 years ago. We worked on it.
You two?
Just him. We enjoyed drinking together.
Sure.
In the back of this creative mind, the wheels were turning on this idea, I think.
Yeah. And then about 2.5 years ago was when we really
pushed forward,
pushed the branding idea and that, you know, we were going to open our own distillery and make everything ourselves. And, you know, it wasn't until a few months after that we had the name of the company and the company was formed. So that was 2016. And then, you know, we signed leases in early 2017, ordering equipment from all over the world.
Sure.
And,
how many barrels do you guys have aging right now?
A few dozen. Yeah, a few dozen. It's not a huge volume.
Sure.
It's still pretty small. But I guess now we're capable of laying down, you know, a dozen per batch, give or take.
And you guys are in specs, mm-hmm, right? And you got a few mom and pops. Shout out to Ryan's in Spring.
Absolutely. They were the first one to pick us up. So
really, the first retailer.
Yeah, Bo and Ann are
awesome people, man. Awesome people. I've talked about them in depth. Bo and Ann both could not be more what's the way to say this that doesn't sound offensive? Not mousy, but kind of just sweet and not abrasive or they're just so humble. And every time I go up there to visit Bo and end up spending my entire paycheck, in this freaking store. His store is incredible, man.
I have a bank roll of the tickets.
Yeah, I do too. They're in my.
I could be a Chuck E. Cheese.
They're in my visor right now. My daughter was like, so we take the kids to Dave and Buster's, and she every time she sees them, she thinks
it's like
they're
playing skee ball.
She thinks they're for some gaming, you know, Chuck E. Cheese's or whatever. And I'm like, no, they're for daddy's.
You can play games, right?
They're for daddy's formula. They're for daddy's milk. Yeah. He's got this incredible store, and his. That Scotch wall goes from floor to ceiling. It's 12 foot tall.
I do like it. I've taken a couple bottles off his hand.
He's a great guy, and him and Ann are both just extremely humble and kind.
But I never win at the raffle.
Neither do I. And I dropped. I remember specifically coming in there and dumping enough money that I thought I'm for sure gonna win this. There ain't no way I'm not going to win this.
You know, as a person that walked in and bought a pack of smokes and they got one ticket.
He got one ticket or something. Travis Whitmire won and he didn't even take the bottle. I was like, if I had won, I would have taken the bottle. And he's like, nah, it's fine. You can have it. Give it to the next guy. And I thought, God damn it. Can we say God damn it on the radio?
You got to take the bottle.
I don't know. Well, the other guy will figure it out, right? The other producer. We have another producer for the radio portion, and he has to
like QC. Like,
yeah, he can't say man. Shit or fuck.
Let's get it all out there.
Yeah. But you are happy you produce the show. This is a good show. Oh, shut up. I hate you so much. That was such a give. All right. Well, we are running fastly out of time. Let me get to the vodka before we get too far behind. I really hate to dump this. I really enjoyed it.
There's plenty more. We got a big still.
Yeah. Second biggest in Texas, I heard. Houston, I heard. That's way too much vodka, man. Yeah, see, yours has a note to it, like an actual, there's substance to it. There's this, I won't say who, Wheatley Vodka, but they, when they distill 10 times, and it has a clean alcohol note. So mm-hmm. there's no grain, there's nothing comes through on the nose. It's very antiseptic, which mm-hmm. I don't like, but I can see why some people would like.
Right.
This has like an actual...
Yeah, I mean, we want you to know that...
To taste something.
It came from different grains. And I think it's cool. Like, there are some people out there making, you know, vodka from peas or different grains, different fruits. So I appreciate when someone is...
When something tastes like something?
Bringing that through. Hey, you want some more?
No, I'm just going to look at the bottle. Right. Yeah. What's the proof on this?
It's 80. Yeah, that's
100% distilled in bottles. Typical.
Yes.
Yeah, got your address on it. Look at you following all the TTB laws.
I don't want Wade to yell at me.
Yeah, Wade will yell at you too. And Wade's a big supporter of you guys. And Wade, with being the big whiskey guy that he is, when he signs off on something, it's something that I think a lot of people respect, those who know Wade. And this has actual flavor to it. It's not just
Yeah, it is different.
It's got a bourbon mash bill,
mm-hmm.
corn, wheat, barley.
Right. And, you know, we want a little bit of the sweetness from the corn, a little bit of the body from the wheat. You'll get a little bit of malty graininess through it.
It's got a white dog spirit to it. No pun intended. It tastes like unaged whiskey, not... vodka, which I can't stand. I can't stand vodka. And that's got an actual flavor profile.
And I mean, we're whiskey drinkers.
Sure.
You know, and that's, I think, probably how we trial and erred a lot of spirits. You know, when we scaled up and, you know, you're making a lot of different products and you're trying different yeast and different grain bills and a lot of different things. And we didn't want something that tasted like everything else out there.
Sure.
So there's this very, very, very small window of what vodka typically tastes like. And we didn't want to do that. And so, you know, we wanted something that we can use in our gin that's unique and has a really intriguing note to it. And so, you know, this is something that a lot of the bartenders are actually finding a unique way to use it.
Sure.
That they can put it in cocktails that's different than the other vodkas out there.
Yeah. You don't want to just be the same as everyone else. Well, with all that being said, I know that you guys had we had briefly talked about seeing you guys at the social. We might see you next year. We'll see. We'll talk about that.
I'm sure that we'll have a table or two.
Sure. I would like to get people tasting your product in their hands, just to branch out. So is there anything, now keeping in mind this airs next week, is there anything coming up that people can go to or find? Is there any upcoming local tastings? Is there, if they want to come visit you?
So we're actually sponsoring the Festival of Abilities in the Heights next weekend.
Okay.
And so this
will air on Friday. So
yeah, so that will actually be
we could probably move it up Thursday.
That following weekend. you know, that's just something that we feel strongly about, is being part of the community and doing things that support the community.
Sure.
And local events and fundraising.
What's the Festival of Abilities?
So that's for a new playground for kids of special needs.
Okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. And they can find tickets for that?
Online.
If they look up Festival of Abilities?
Yes.
Okay. Sweet. What we'll do is we'll kind of move this up to an early Thursday show. That way people get a chance to see it and hear about the event next weekend and see if they can make that happen.
We're doing tastings next weekend as well. I'll be at Specs and Tomball.
Specs at Tomball?
On Friday. Week,
on Friday?
Mm-hmm. And I'll be Specs Midtown Friday.
Boom. Friday, what time?
2 to 5.
I'm 5 to 8.
There Tomball. You go. Tomball 5 to 8. Where? Downtown?
Midtown.
Midtown 2 to 5. And next weekend over at the Festival of Abilities. Sweet. Cheers, guys. Thanks so much for coming. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
Appreciate it.